The Bama Beat Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at Zaxby's.com/podcast. That's Zaxby's.com/podcast. And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. This is your host, Clint Lamb, sitting here once again with Cecil Hurt. How are you doing today, Cecil?
Great. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. It looks like Alabama's got a pretty big game on the schedule this Saturday as number two LSU comes into town. Just kind of wanted to get your initial thoughts. Alabama's obviously coming out of a bye week. But, you know, there's a lot of storylines as this game approaches, and I kind of wanted to just get your take on where, you know, maybe Tua Tagovailoa is at. Is there any new information with him? You know, is that something that you've heard anything recently about?
Well, we're recording this on Wednesday morning, and Nick Saban was just on the SEC teleconference and said it'd be a game day decision.
So more of the same.
He's been out at practice. We don't get to see the full practice, you know, what we've seen. You know, he's looked okay, and that's what Nick Saban said. He's practiced okay. That would indicate to me that they feel like there's pretty good chance he can play. But if he can't, they'll go with Mac Jones. But yeah, I would be surprised if Tua didn't play, but, you know, maybe on a trial basis. But
right.
Who knows?
Just kind of see how – put him out there, see how he does, and then if you got to take him back out, I guess that's part of it. Okay, as far as, you know, the actual game, what are some of the things that you're looking out for, some keys to the game, in your opinion? Obviously, you know, there's a lot of different angles you can take this, but what are some of the things you're looking at?
I think the first thing is how much pressure Alabama can get on Joe Burrow, how much they can disrupt him if you let him sit back there. You know, his accuracy is close to 80% this year. He makes good reads. He's got good receivers, got playmakers out there. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, they're receivers who can make things happen after the catch. So you've got to speed him up. You got to disrupt him, which they did last year. All of a sudden, now the storyline is that old Burrow was hurt last year. Would have been interesting to know that last year, you know.
He's playing much different football
this
season.
I'm sure he's a tough individual, and he is playing much different football. So, got to speed him up. Got to do some things to disrupt him. Auburn did some things. Auburn's a different defense than Alabama because they can get pressure with their front four. Alabama can do it from the edge. They need somebody to make a push in the middle, whether that's Raekwon Davis, whether it's Christian Barmore coming in off the bench. But you can't let, you know, the first thing, the most important thing, and this probably goes a little bit for LSU's defense too with Tua, you can't just let him have a clean pocket all day and expect your secondary to cover those guys 5 seconds or more and not get burned by it. I mean, that's just, you got to disrupt him.
Well, I do think that Alabama is going to be able to put pretty consistent pressure on Joe Burrow. Now, they also need to understand the defense. I mean, they need to understand Joe Burrow has been fantastic under pressure this season. He tends to thrive in chaos quite a bit, and we've seen that time and time again. They need to understand that even though maybe they're doing everything right, Joe Burrow is still going to make some plays. You're not going to be able – you know, a lot of people if anybody is out there thinking that Alabama is going to come out and force Joe Burrow to have the kind of performance that they did against Leonard Fournette a few years ago, 31 yards rushing and kind of ruined his Heisman chances, I don't really think that's going to be the case. It's a different style quarterback compared to running back, obviously.
Right.
But I do think he's going to be able to make a few plays in this game. You just got to weather that storm and continue to play from a down-to-down basis. But I think – where, you know, obviously you've touched on it a little bit, Terrell Lewis to me is a much better pure pass rusher than anybody on Auburn's defensive line. Granted, Auburn's defensive line as a whole is much better.
Right.
But I don't think they have anybody that's going to be a top tier pass rusher of the caliber of Terrell Lewis. So I think that makes a pretty big difference. But I think probably the biggest, when you look at the way Auburn was trying to win and early on, against that LSU passing game, they went that 3-1-7 defense, and it was because they didn't have a lot of faith in their secondary, which was understandable. Their secondary has been the weakness, the biggest weakness of their defense so far this season. The front seven is really good, and the secondary is not bad. It's just in comparison, obviously. And then, of course, LSU was able to counter that and say, okay, with you guys, no matter how good your defensive line is, if we got five offensive linemen and a tight end against your three defensive linemen, we're going to be able to run the football. So that's exactly the way that they countered. And then, of course, Auburn had to make adjustments from that point. Alabama's not going to have to go seven defensive backs. They can go five defensive backs or six, you know, dime packages, nickel, and be fine. And I think that really plays in Alabama's favor in comparison to Auburn.
Well, it certainly opened up the run game for LSU when they made that adjustment. Ed Orgeron talked about that at his press conference on Monday. That, and Burrow talked about it too, that at times Auburn was in a 3-1-7, you know, which they couldn't really defend the run on the edge very well. And so St. Hilaire hurt him on that. I don't think Alabama will gimmick it up to that. To that extent, right. I think they've got confidence in their corners. I think they feel like their safeties can make plays. So you certainly will see a lot of nickel, a lot of dime. Shaheen Carter, see what his status is, and he'll make a difference. And some young guys, you know, Jordan Bell's going to have to make a difference. And so we shall see.
And if you flip it to the other side of the football, and you're talking about Alabama's offensive line versus LSU's defensive line, and particularly their pass rush, Chasen is obviously a quality pass rusher, and he could cause Alabama some problems. Ed Orgeron and company over there at LSU really feel like the loss of a guy like Michael Divinity Jr. is not that big of a deal. Now, granted, they've had some time to prepare for that. They've played some games this season without Michael Divinity, but he was leading the team in sacks despite only playing in five games. He led the team in sacks or tied for the lead last year. He was a quality pass rusher, and I do think Chasen is a better pass rusher despite not having the same sack numbers. But I think as a number two option, which you really, really need, if Terrell Lewis is the only thing that Alabama has on Saturday night providing a pass rush, you can do some things to take him out of it.
Right. Yeah. Jennings needs to complement that. And like I said, they got to get some push
in the middle.
Up the middle.
Absolutely. So Alabama's offensive line right now, at least in my opinion, is playing their best football of the season. And a lot of people thought that this could be a very good offensive line coming into this season. They started, you know, with the mixing and matching. They didn't have Deonte Brown, and there were some growing pains there. But now that they're kind of getting their footing, to me, they're playing like one of the best offensive lines in the country. Granted, the competition that they've gone against the last few weeks maybe isn't top tier. But one thing I'll say, they manhandled in a lot of ways Tennessee's defense, their front seven. And I think their front seven is playing fantastic football right now. So that, to me, even though maybe Tennessee's defense as a whole is not great, the defensive front seven, especially their front guys, are playing really good football. So that's a much bigger win for Alabama's offensive line than I think they're getting credit for.
I don't know that LSU has one dominant guy on the defensive line. What they do have are a lot of guys. They rotate in a lot of guys.
Right, a lot of depth. And which is, you know, and granted, that makes a huge difference in these
sure.
type of ball games.
Sure.
So you've got to give them credit for that. Rashard Lawrence, with him being back and playing, I think he's going to have a great NFL career. Can play inside or out. And an odd man front or an even front. The versatility is certainly there. Now, when you're talking about LSU secondary, which should be the strength of their defense, you know, it's a little bit different. They have a lot of NFL talent. You talk about Grant Delpit, probably one of the top defensive players in college football. Christian Fulton, I think last season he didn't get enough credit. I thought he was a better corner than Greedy Williams. Jacoby Stevens is a talented player, and he's built more like a linebacker playing safety. And I think that
Stingley's going to be a first rounder.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, he's just a freshman now. I don't know what his stat. I'm not sure what Delpit's status will be. I'm not sure what Stingley's status will be. He left the Auburn game, and you know. He's had 2 weeks to prepare, but
I think
we'll see.
Delpit is one. I think it was an ankle thing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So
both ankles.
With those guys, I just think that Alabama's receivers matches up pretty well with LSU's defensive backs, just because, you know, granted, Fulton, I'll be interested to see how they use him. There's been talk from some LSU media guys. Are they going to maybe kick him inside and put him on Jerry Jeudy in the slot? Are they going to leave him on the perimeter? Where you put Fulton is probably an area where Alabama doesn't want to try to go. They want to try to, you know, avoid a Delpit or a Fulton. But I think what's been the biggest difference in LSU's secondary, and the reason that despite having all that NFL talent, they're ranked number 60 in the country in pass defense, is it's those couple of positions where maybe they're not as loaded. And Stingley, of course, has played fantastic as well. But the inside guy, the nickel corner, when they've had to go five deep on the defensive backs, I think Jacoby Stevens in coverage, they have some exploitable parts in their pass defense, and that's where Alabama's going to try to attack.
I think, and we kind of referenced this earlier, but I think there's been so much attention paid, obviously, first of all, to Tua and to Delpit, but there's two situations, one on each side, that have kind of gone under the radar. And we mentioned one, Michael Divinity being out. I mean, that's where they got a lot of pass rush pressure from him.
Absolutely.
You know, really good athlete. I think that's bigger than people are making. And I think Miller Forrestall being out for Alabama is bigger for Alabama. You know, it forces Alabama where Miller could kind of, you had different options with him. I think whoever they choose to replace him, they could go big. You know, they could go with Randolph or Chris Owens out there and just have a blocker, have a big blocker that's not going to really factor that much in the receiving end of it. Or you could, you've got guys, Major Tennyson, Jaleel Billingsley, who could be receivers, but are you going to play them, and how much of the protection package for Tua is going to involve leaving the tight end in? And with Forrestall, he could sort of do any of it, sort of a jack of all trades, and was getting better, I think, in the receiving end of it, and just a really fluke injury to get hit in the throat, but got to tend to it, and he's out probably until the postseason.
Right.
Almost certainly until the postseason. And I think that's a big area.
I think that's important. That's a great point. You haven't heard a whole lot about that, and I think from a tip in your hand standpoint, that's also an excellent point. Miller Forrestall had been criticized quite a bit for his blocking ability, and there was a few times in some of these games he's gotten manhandled. But yes, I will say against Arkansas, he was blocking his tail off. I went back and watched him in particular. He was doing a lot better, and you could. There's a lot of want to as far as getting better in that area of his game. And with him out there, I mean, I think they feel more comfortable with him as a blocker than a guy like Major Tennyson right now. So, you know, but
tight end's much more a factor for LSU with Moss.
Absolutely. And that is one area where they are light years ahead of Alabama. You have to wonder, and I was just a huge fan, maybe he wouldn't have been much of a factor at all, but Kedrick James, I mean, if he would have stuck around, I liked what he brought to the table. And back in the spring, he was doing some big things as far as being a balanced player. You got some thoughts on what?
There's on the field and there's off the field, and you gotta succeed at both.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, well, as far as Mac Jones, Tua is obviously probably going to play. Do you think that they have a completely different game plan if Mac Jones is forced into the game?
No. I mean, they do different things, clearly. There are some things you call, but I don't think it – certainly from what you could judge against Arkansas, it didn't look like they were a different offense or more conservative. You know,
right.
But it was the same offense. It was just called more conservatively.
Right.
He's not going to take some of the shots that Tua will take just relying on his arm strength. But, you know, I thought they got receivers out and Mac was able to, you know, I'm not going to get into the game manager thing, but I think Mac was able to take advantage of what was there. I don't know what he could have done any better against Arkansas. Now, LSU's not Arkansas, and the pressure to score points is not the same. But so I don't think they change the offense so much as they're just more cautious with the offense,
right,
as anybody would be with a backup. That's not a knock at Mac.
Well, I think we've covered the game pretty well. Also, obviously, the college football playoff rankings, the first set, which don't really mean a whole lot right now, came out last night during the Alabama game. I know you were very busy with that. But do you have any thoughts, as there have been a lot of speculation both ways, as far as a lot of people are saying that the loser of this game could very well have a strong claim. I think ESPN at one point had it, Alabama, at like a 60% chance of still making the playoffs, even if they lose. Do you agree with those in comparison to, you know, them getting in over a conference champion like Oklahoma or Oregon, or, you know, maybe a one-loss Penn State in comparison, or a one-loss Ohio State? You don't want to assume that, of course, but kind of what's your thoughts on that?
First, there's a third of the season left to play.
A lot can change, yeah.
September, October, November, and November's still left to play. So I think the undefeated conference champion, whoever that may be, even if it's Baylor or Minnesota, will make it. Baylor and Minnesota will not be favored in all their remaining games. So we'll see what happens to them. If you get Baylor off the table, where there can only be three possible undefeated champions, then you start debating one-loss teams. And I don't know how much a conference championship will mean to Oklahoma or Oregon when they're stacked up against Alabama or LSU. Or I don't think Clemson can stand a loss because they don't have any potential good wins
right
on their schedule. You know, we've made this point before. You know, if Clemson goes undefeated, I have no problem with them making the playoffs. That's not the issue. Could Auburn go undefeated against Clemson's schedule? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Could LSU? I won't say Georgia, because Georgia lost to South Carolina and Clemson plays South Carolina. We'll see how that comes out. But could Oklahoma? Could several teams.
Yeah, and could is a lot different than would. But
would, sure, yeah.
You got to
go out, you got to be up, you got to play.
Right.
But would be favored in Las Vegas.
Absolutely.
In every one of those games. Auburn would be they've beaten Texas A&M. And if they played again this week in Auburn, Auburn would be a home favorite against Texas A&M.
Right, absolutely.
And they'd be favored over Wake Forest and Syracuse and whatever else Clemson has.
Right.
So, you know, but, you know, instead, Auburn had to play at Florida and at LSU. And so they got two losses, and nobody's talking about Auburn.
Right. And that's a great point. I think that, like you said, there's so much that can change. And this stuff we talk about, the what ifs, there's still, I mean, how many teams are still arguably in the running? There's still a ton. But a lot of these teams are going to start knocking each other off. There's no way. I don't think you're going to have
either Penn State or Minnesota. It's debatable whether an Alabama LSU loser can survive. Maybe they can't. Penn State at Minnesota loser, they can't.
So do you think that,
unless Penn State them turned around and won the Big Ten, then they'd be back in the conversation.
Right, and that's to me probably the biggest argument based off of where they have Penn State. Now, granted, and I know that you aren't as familiar with the rankings because you had the Alabama basketball game, so that some of this could be news to you, some of it might not.
Yeah, and also because I'm just not inspired to study them that heavily on November the 5th.
Well, I do think, because you wonder how much can change after, you know, this weekend, or even really from when the rankings came out, Penn State was ranked behind Alabama.
Right.
Now, granted, they play Minnesota this weekend. Right. Alabama plays LSU. If they beat Minnesota, an undefeated Minnesota, and then turn around and maybe lose to an Ohio State, and Alabama, you know, loses to LSU, and that to me will be very interesting, because right now it seems like
what hurts Alabama about losing to LSU, aside from having a loss,
right,
is that it also takes away a potential good one, because we would assume at that point that LSU would go to Atlanta.
Right, absolutely.
And so Alabama's only other ranked opponent would be Auburn. Whereas if they win, not only do they play Auburn, but they'll play, let's presume it's Georgia, in Atlanta, which will be another top 10 team. So the strength of schedule just builds on itself.
Right.
I think if you get to the end of the year, even though Ohio State is number one in this week's poll, an undefeated SEC champion Alabama would be the number one team.
Okay.
I think they would jump over Ohio State.
Yeah, I definitely think if they beat LSU, turn around, beat Auburn, a number 11 team, turn around and beat Georgia, you know, or Florida, whoever it ends up being. Yeah, I definitely think that it's the only concerning part, and it's like you just mentioned, when you're talking about if they lose to LSU and they don't go to the SEC championship, and let's say Auburn loses to Alabama and Georgia, you're talking about Alabama's best win on their schedule.
I mean, there's all kind of scenarios at that point, all of which Alabama deserves because they didn't take care of business against LSU.
Right. So that's the way, you know, Coach Saban and the team's approaching this.
Yeah,
I think he said in this teleconference just a little bit ago that he hadn't even looked at the rankings.
Yeah, that's what they can control is this Saturday. And winning is good. And not when it won't be good. And, you know, but then you get into debate that you just have to wait until after the conference championship games for the debate to have value. Alabama's made all five playoffs. I think they've been treated fairly by the committee all five times.
Agreed.
If it doesn't work out this year because you didn't win against LSU, then you put yourself in that situation.
Right. And I think that the average Alabama fan...
I think Alabama will beat LSU, but that's...
I do, too.
That's,
right.
You know, and we talk, not what we're discussing. We do a picks podcast.
Yeah.
Just referencing the picks podcast so you can go listen to that one, too.
But I definitely think, you know, a lot of the casual Alabama fans, when Alabama lost, especially like they did to Auburn a couple of years ago, they assumed they were done. You know, there's nothing they could do. They're going to be sitting at home for the SEC championship. They're not getting in. The sky was falling mentality. And we saw how it worked out. So there are so many things right here at the end that can go a certain way. There's a team, you know, a South Carolina could creep up and beat one of these teams like a Penn State and take them out of the running, or Clemson or whoever. I mean, you know, you assume there's a lot of assumptions that could be made right now, and really it's just better to let it play out itself. So I did want to get your thoughts on that with the initial rankings coming out. I know that that's on a lot of fans' minds. So, yeah, I appreciate you hopping on here with me today, Cecil. It's been a good talk. This Alabama-LSU game should be, you know, very exciting, hopefully. So we'll see how it plays out, and we'll be here next week kind of recapping what happens. I appreciate you hopping on here with me. This has been the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. This episode of the Bama Beat Podcast has been brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast. That's zaxby's.com/podcast.